Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do a podcast. Yeah, 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 yeah. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Saturday, October 14th, 2017. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival, and you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 243 of the show. If you're wondering, if you're asking yourself, hey, why is this episode 243? Where's episode 242? Well, folks, episode 242 is behind the Patreon paywall, and I would like you to subscribe. We got Randolph Terrence over there on the Patreon side of things. I think it's his third appearance on the show, and we get to a Randolph that I don't think you've ever heard before. How's that for selling it? It's really good. So that's currently up behind the Patreon wall. Sign up for that. It's a good thing. It's good. We got more stuff in store for you. You got the Indie Movie Corner. You got some special episodes of the Standard Issue podcast, and we're going to probably pump out some more soon. But right now, episode 243, super special return guest, Michael Felder from the Bleacher Report. So happy to have him back. We had a great chat, and I'm going to share that with you in a bit. Right now, I'm sitting here in my apartment like I do most of the time, and I'm recording this intro. I'm sitting here. I just had a nice spaghetti dinner that I made for myself. I got up early. I went to the grocery store. I went to Walmart. I had a nice Chick-fil-A breakfast. And I went over to Walmart. I said, you know what? I want to make some spaghetti. So I got the ingredients. And this was the first time that I had meat from Walmart. This was the first time that I bought ground beef. I was a little nervous about it. I texted Randolph Terrence, guest of episode 242 on Patreon. Texted him because he's a big fan of like meat from Target. And I was just wondering, would that be equivalent? I said, hey, you know, I'm thinking this guy's been to Target to get like meat, and I've done that before too, and he was a big proponent of that. And I said, okay, let me just see what's good with Walmart. So I texted him. He didn't text me back until I paid for my food and I was in my car, and I was like, well, if I die because of this food, this ground beef, it's gonna be your fault, and say some nice words for me at my funeral. And you know, Walmart is one of those places where it's a money trap. I was thinking, okay, I'm going to get some spices. I'm going to get some ground beef. And that's it. Maybe some knickknacks, some soap. You know, they didn't have my Reese's peanut butter bar candy. And I was disappointed in that. I was kind of looking forward to, every time I go to Walmart, I like to get the big giant Reese's peanut butter bar. They didn't have it. I was disappointed. And I got some stuff, and it just added up to like $70. And it wasn't that much. I don't know. It's just Walmart and Target are just like that. And to me, that's spending a lot of money. Like, I'm not balling out of control. That was like, ugh, I kind of spent too much there. So I got some groceries and I was like, you know what, instead of just getting food all the time, I'll just make my own. I was like, oh, I wouldn't get, Saturday is kind of when I have, the weekend is usually when I get out of, the weekend is where I need to curtail the shit that I eat, like put a cut down on like the bullshit that I eat. And I was like, you know, just to make myself a nice spaghetti dinner, had a salad, you know, I made it, it's home cooked, and it's not McDonald's, it's not Five Guys, it's not like Boy, I had some Five Guys on, what was that? That was like Wednesday? No, that was Thursday? Oh my God, it was so good. It was so good. Ooh, still not better than Shake Shack. I don't want to give it that. I'm not giving it that. If Shake, do we take, Fuddruckers isn't really fast food. That's a sit-down restaurant. So let's take Fuddruckers out of it. Then top fast food burgers, Shake Shack, Five Guys. And what's beneath that? I don't know what's below. Okay. Shake Shack. Did Don Will and I do this before? Shake Shack, Five Guys, Wendy's. So that's the top three. I guess that's got to be the top three, right? Because Sonic, when Sonic is on point, it's on point. So you could kind of put that in your five. And McDonald's, when it's on point, when it's a fresh, like the double cheeseburger is the best thing that they've got going there to me. So when a double cheeseburger is fresh, you can't really fuck with it for that for the value because it's cheap. So let's just go with Shake Shack at number one, Five Guys at number two, Wendy's at number three. Shit, Sonic at number four and McDonald's at five. I mean, Burger King, sometimes Burger King is just really dry. Maybe it's a charbroiled thing. And they got this place called the Habit Burger that's coming up. I think that's kind of got the five In-N-Out Burger vibe. And I haven't been to In-N-Out enough to really come to the conclusion. I guess it would be top 10, but In-N-Out Burger, I don't know. I have to spend more time on the West Coast to try that. All right, I'm getting off track. But so I did that, and I did a podcast this week, Medium Popcorn, with Brandon Collins and Justin Brown. I think that's my fourth appearance on that show. We talked about one of my all-time favorite horror movies, or just like for the nostalgia's sake, The Faculty. And we talked about that. They fucking hated it. I know it's just a part of my youth that I really enjoyed. It's just something about that movie. We go into detail on that on the episode. My week was pretty chill. Just worked my ass off in the office doing TPS reports. Had an audition for a movie, which was cool. The only thing is, I don't even get nervous about auditions anymore. The only thing I worry about is getting there on time and leaving work and not like using any of my time off to go to auditions. So if I can do that, that's a win. That's like me just, and a big win is not paying for parking. So I had an appointment scheduled at 3:45. I work in Westchester. It's an hour away. I wasn't going to make it. So I got there. It was of course, it's an accident on the highway on like getting into the city. And so I just told my manager, I was like, hey, I'm going to be a little late. Just please let them know. I made the audition and I found parking. But the thing about the parking was, I think it was like restricted from like until 6 o'clock. And I got there around a little before four. And I was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to get a ticket. I was like, oh, my God. But I just got to go to this audition. Ended up going to the audition. Audition was fine. I nailed it. And then I get to my car, no ticket. So I felt like I got a win. I felt like I got to show a casting director that I hadn't seen before, to show them what I could do. And that was cool. And then the best part about auditions for me is after the audition, and I usually talk to my parents after. We don't really talk about the audition per se, but we just kind of talk. And it's almost like a podcast, because I listen to them. Most of the time they don't fight, and it's a really good conversation, and I enjoy that. So that was like kind of part of my that was my Thursday. It ended up being like just a pretty good fucking Thursday. Okay, so that's it. Let me give you some movie reviews and I'll get out of here. So Tuesday, I went to the $5 movie Tuesday, and I went to go see Flatliners because I'm an Ellen Page is my birthday twin. I like Ellen Page. I'm partial to her. And I didn't feel like seeing, Blade Runner. I didn't really feel like seeing a Blade Runner. People said it was long. And then plus on a Tuesday night, on a school night, on a work night, I was just like, I can't do 2.5-3 hours at like 9 o'clock. There's no way. The movie's going to be watching me. And I was like, okay, I'm going to see this. Flatliners is an hour. It's like an hour and 45 or something. Hour 50, rather. And I was like, I'm going to do that. And so let me read you the blurb. God, this is a 4% on Rotten Tomatoes. All right, hold on. Here we go. 5 medical students embark on a daring and dangerous experiment to gain insight into the mystery of what lies beyond the confines of life. The bold adventure begins when they trigger near-death experiences by stopping their hearts for short periods of time. As their trials become more perilous, each must confront the sins from their past while facing the paranormal consequences of journeying to the other side. This movie stars Nina Dobrev, Ellen Page, Diego Luna, Kiefer Sutherland, and James Norton. And Kiersey Clemons. I don't know why they ain't put Black Girl in the top billing, but she was damn sure in it, and she is a lovely young woman. You do not have to go see this movie in the theater. I think it's a 4% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's definitely a reboot. It's a reboot. I think Kiefer Sutherland. I want to say, what's the Flatliners original? Let's see. When did that come out? 1990. It came out in 1990. Kevin Bacon. I think Heifer was in this too, young. He was. And I want to see who did he play the same guy. Did he play the same guy? Why are they giving his character? That's weird. I'm vamping right now. So his name was Nelson in the original. And I'm wondering, is he the... No, they changed his name. So he's a totally different guy. He's not the same dude. And I vaguely remember that original one. 4% on Rotten Tomatoes. You can definitely wait for this. If you go see it, don't pay more than $5 to see it. I technically didn't even pay for this because I had Stubbs rewards points and the ticket was $5, so I didn't have to pay. And I just paid for a water and peanut M&M's. So, you know, it was all good. This movie is basically hot people's whose arms are too short to box with God. This is one of those Icarus movies like Ex Machina, the Alex Garland movies where you try to you're too smart for your own good and you have to pay your toll if you're gonna keep up with this type of lifestyle or with these actions basically. So it's one of those movies. It's just like hot people learning from their mistakes. And it's entertaining, you know. I didn't expect much about it, but it was okay. There were these three girls that were sitting beside me. I don't really like when it's not a small theater. It's at the new AMC Dine-In. I'm trying to be better at this to not just be like this reclusive guy. Felder and I get into this, like when people sit by you in a theater, especially the ones where you can pick your own seats and whatnot. And they were just like, it's just weird to me. But I mean, that's what you get when you go to, you sit by people. People sit by you. Maybe that's just a weird quirk in me. I'm not 100% sure. But the movie was fun. Those girls were freaked out and they were jumping. It's like, how much can you really jump at a PG-13 movie? I don't know. But it was okay. So if you have a hankering to see this, I would just say don't pay more than $5. And okay, I'll give you another one. you know what? I think I'm going to save that. You know, I'll save this and I might make this. I might have a. Yeah, we'll save that one. I'm hoping to see The Foreigner and Marshall this week. I'm hoping to see at least one of those. And then I'll talk about those with you. But other than that, guys, let's just get to Michael Felder. Felder and I sat down via phone, talked to him on the phone, and we just had a great conversation about, you'll hear it. We just had it's just always great hearing him. And this was kind of like a sports, this was like sports heavy at the top. And I always like to have someone on the show that knows more than me about a particular topic. So, and I get more insight from listening to people like Felder talk about the shit that he knows about. And it's great. Because if my sports analysis is just like, he's good, that guy's real, or that guy's bad. That's kind of how I am. But I still love the game. But it's great just listening to him, his expertise on college football and everything like that, and the NFL. And we get into some social stuff, and we just kind of we did a review of The Mountain Between Us. We broke that movie down. So you heard me talk about it last week a little bit, and then Felder and I break it down even more. So please enjoy my conversation with the great Michael Felder. All right, what's the climate like down in Charlotte post Cam Newton's comments?
It's a little bit mixed, honestly. It's one of those things where there's people that are like, no, we don't want this pro football team. I think a guy booked a permit to protest for 1 hour about, we want people to stand for the national anthem right in front of Panthers practice. I think there's also people that are a little wary of Cam Newton. I mean, he's the same guy that was kind of all lives matter after the Frank Luntz, you know, the Republican strategist or whatever you want to call him, came in and kind of took all of the kind of the culture, doing it for the culture out of Cam Newton. So I think people are wary of that in terms of, is he trying to get back in the good graces? Does he really mean it? What does it mean coming from him versus somebody else? So that part was a little interesting. And then you wrap that up, the fist up with what he said to Jordan Rodriguez. Right. And there's folks who are really looking to bash him, because I think for a lot of people, and this is one of those things, and I picked it up from Bomani, if you go back and look at some of the people that are bashing him, and you look at how alt-righty everything else they say is, it really seems like they're looking to capitalize on an opportunity. They're not actually feminist or pro-women. And then I think there's other people that are looking to excuse anything that he says because, obviously, he's a black man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like it's a little bit... I mean, he's obviously is wrong, and as I think I coined the term, someone who is kind of like alt-right for black quarterbacks, there's no defense. Like, you can't really defend right. that. But then somebody on Twitter did make the point that you can admonish Cam for what he said and those beliefs that are like kind of like the undercurrent of what he said, and then at the same time be, you know, people that are low key racist about him in general, like you can like not like that either, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% believe that. And I keep seeing the other weird thing is people say, well, you know, he's immature. It was immaturity. I was like, yeah, he's 28, 29.
Wait a minute, Felder. He's a 28-year-old kid. And
yeah, like, what are we seeing?
I just, you know, I'm alluding to like the Ryan Lochte. And
oh, no, absolutely. And that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. Every time a white dude messes up, it's like, he's a kid. And then, I tweeted that a couple of days ago, and I tweeted that Tyrese was also a 38-year-old kid. So I don't know, man. It's obviously there's differently. It's almost like, I'm growing tired of if he was white, he would, because we know that, like, we already know that,
right?
It's all, yeah, it's inherent. And somebody somebody, like, to excuse Cam Newton of what he said, somebody posted Rob Gronkowski, 69 touchdowns. You know what that means, baby. Like, I mean, but it's just fun loving Gronkowski. But Cam, that joke just bombed. Like, he was trying to go for a joke, and it bombed. And you could see the look on his face when it was just like, ooh.
Well, I also, here's the other thing, though, and I don't know if a ton of white people understand this very well or not, but dude, to talk like that, like, and I think Sherelle McMillan said it pretty well. He said, like, I'm not saying anything specifically about Cam, but all the guys that I know that say, that use female in conversation have sexist tendencies. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's cultural in terms of differences or not. I think a lot, like, seeing people go, Cam Newton uses the word females to put down female reporter. I was like, oh, you don't get it.
Yeah.
You don't understand that, like, dudes that say females, like, every time I hear that word, I've heard it most of my life from people. I mean, I play football. I've heard it in the locker room consistently.
Yeah.
About guys, just from guys going, man, you know, you can't trust these females. Females be tripping. Man, you know, like, you might as well say bitches.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of weird to me, because I feel like we grew up where, I guess, women were starting to be in the locker room more often.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what I know your mom is in education, correct?
Yeah, mom and dad.
And so, like, it was weird to me growing up when I had a man teacher. I never really thought about, I'm not trying to say like I was so blind to it, but just sexism, because people in authority throughout my life, a majority of them have been women. And I was just like, that's my boss. I want to make sure I'm doing right by my boss, by my teacher. You know, not necessarily subservient, but just respectful in that way. So it never really like bothered me that I would see Jemele Hill giving a football take, as you know, or Michelle Beadle or whoever talking in the locker rooms. Like, just give me the info, and I'll absorb it and take note of it. But then I guess the internet just makes it more prevalent, where it's like, wow, you guys really hate women.
Oh, the internet makes it very clear. The big thing for me, I guess this is, I'm sure there's going to be some reporters that hear this and think it's total blasphemy, mm-hmm. but I think anybody can do a reporter's job.
Yeah.
I think all you're doing is telling me stuff that other people said. Mm-hmm. And that's not a knock on what they do. I think it's important. I think they uncover things through research and investigation and questioning. I get all that. But most of these guys who are beat reporters for the NFL, the NBA, college football, whatever, mm-hmm. they don't know. It's not like they're super geniuses at sports.
Yeah.
So if you're a beat reporter, which is what Jordan Rodriguez is, if you're a sideline reporter, which we see men and women do,
right.
all you're doing is telling me stuff that other people told you. All you're doing is, you know, you're using your, you know, some deductive reasoning. You're using some investigative skills. Right. There's no perfect gender for that. Hey, might even be women because they'll listen. So I guess I don't understand this idea of women shouldn't do this. This is men should talk about football, because most of these dudes talking about football don't know anything. That's the other part. Like, it's not like they're breaking down the game, you know, hardcore. I saw people talk about that too with what he said. He's like, it's crazy to hear a female ask about routes. And I was like, she asked how excited it gets you to see one of your players using his body and throwing his weight around to pick up some extra yards for the team. That's what she asked about.
Yeah.
She didn't ask about, hey man, what's it like when he takes that hard stem inside to break wide for the post? You know, what do you think that's doing? What do you think that's doing for his game? I noticed that he took an extra step on the slant. Was that to buy some more time and sell it harder to the linebacker before he got underneath the nickelback to come inside and make the catch? She didn't ask that. just how is him playing more physical helping out the football team? And he acted like it was some crazy technical question. Like, it's not. So I think that's the other part is we've got to stop acting like only men can do a job where all you're doing is observe and report. Like, that's the whole job. Mm-hmm. If anyone, and I'm not saying anyone, like, in terms of any Joe up the street can do it. Yeah, I understand you have to go to school and there's, you know, there's better writers than others. But what I am saying is that I don't think any gender is better suited for it than another one simply because the people you cover are men. Like, how insane would that be to say that someone can't cover the WNBA because they're a man?
Right.
Like, no one would ever say that nonsense. No one would ever say you can't coach women's basketball, Gino Auriemma, because you're a man. Mm-hmm. It's insane that it's a double standard that only works one way.
Yeah.
Which is what a double standard is. So that was pretty redundant.
Well, I know what you meant. It's all good. Yeah, that was just a thing that just kind of baffled me. And then, you know, and the outbreak of it, there was one lady reporter. Now, what can you say? Because I don't, when I say, I try to not say female, but a woman sports writer or journalist, she said something like, you know, all you guys that are, you know, lambasted in cam, how many women have you had on your podcast to talk about sports or whatever, you know, like
right.
to, you know, or whatever, any issue,
you know, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was just something that was a big flare up. And you know, me, someone who is a proponent of black quarterbacks, that hurt me. there was nothing I could do. I was really, I was hurt, man.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. And it's one of those things where, and I will say this, I have started to work harder to cycle more women into my Twitter feed. I don't have a podcast. So for me, it's just my Twitter feed. And I have started trying to cycle more women in.
Yeah.
Because it's better perspective, more rounded perspective to see things. And
right.
That's the thing that I've started on. A guy got me started on doing. He's like, listen, man, you got to make sure that you're doing it in your everyday life because otherwise you'll gloss over it and you won't even notice it. So I've made an effort to make sure that I'm cycling people in that have a different sort of that are different from me, you know, Hispanic women, black women, white women, but just women in general, getting those into the feed, especially because I work in such a sports focused area that if I don't do it consciously, it won't happen.
Yeah. I feel the same way. And I think my timeline is pretty well rounded. And, but what I do here is a lot of like men are trash, and I think to a point, yeah, I get it, and it's like I think now, like with the, I always say this, with the advent of Twitter and social media, you get to, and other forms of social media, you kind of get this perspective of minorities that you don't, like women, black people, Latina, you know, minorities, brown people. You get that perspective, and I think it becomes annoying to those that are of the majority when they hear all these voices finally getting to be heard, like this, the Harvey Weinstein stuff that came out, and it's just like, wow, I didn't know that. Like, you never would have thought. And this woman who used to be a server at a restaurant in his building was just like told a story about all that. She's a journalist now for some publication, and she was just saying like how like rude and despicable this guy was. And I was just like, wow, this is crazy. So it definitely makes me like fall back and try to take note of things that are going on.
Well, that's just, you're a human, and versus those other people, I think that's part of what Make America Great Again is the idea of rejecting listening to other voices, of having to hear from other people, because ultimately when I hear that, I, obviously the first thing comes to mind that, oh, you just want to go back to, you know, segregation and you want to go back to this. But the littlest part of it is I want to go back to where I didn't have to hear these voices that I don't like anymore. I want to go back to that where these people don't have a voice. Let's go back. Let's make America great again, like the time when we didn't hear from Latinos. Let's make America great again, like the time where we didn't see these police shooting innocent black people. Can we get back to that time?
Yeah. Yeah.
The same idea as, hey, racism wouldn't exist if you would stop talking about it. It wouldn't exist to you, which is very different than it existing to me, because it's going to be in my life whether you talk about it or not.
Mm-hmm. And I go back to this moment where, like, I guess maybe within the last 5 years, where just the more that we know about sports and the more that, like, Twitter's become so pervasive in society, where it's like sports, to me, they're better than any scripted drama going right now, especially the NBA. Like, especially, like, Kyrie wanting to leave and getting traded. And I watched, what's the show, the Rachel Nichols host, The Jump. And she had, like, Brian Windhorst on. And Brian Windhorst follows he's a reporter for the Cavs, and he knows those guys. He's known LeBron since high school, I believe. And the way that he talked about, like, Kyrie and LeBron, it was just like an episode of, like, I never seen them write anything like that on Pretty Little Liars. Like, I never seen, like, any of these teen soaps. Like, the way that he described, he's like, I just don't understand. Like, I don't understand how, you know, they mourned their loss against Golden State 3 months ago, and Kyrie just left him like that. I don't get it. And then LeBron is on his Snapchat with sad, playing sad music and shit. Like, that's Gossip Girl shit. Like, and I don't want to, not to demean it because I love it, but that's some shit. Like, that's just like Keeping Up with the Kardashians, or that's just our version of it. That's just version. Like, it's like, what did he say to him in the locker room? Odell Beckham, like, he's mad about something. What's he mad about? What's going on with him? You know, like, it's the same shit. So I just feel like we guys have to own up to that. Like, because some of that shit is more interesting to me than the actual game.
Yeah, and that's the part, again, that goes back to my idea in terms of anyone can be, that it doesn't,
right.
It's genderless to be a reporter, mm-hmm. because at this height, the narrative is more important than the actual game. People know all the in locker room spats and who liked which picture on Instagram and who sent who what on Snapchat. And mm-hmm. People are more into that than, like, what I do. People are more into that than what, like, Jaws does for the NFL. More than that than, you know, NFL, Edge NFL matchup or NFL matchup, whatever it's called, to me is the best show on television.
That's your shit, because you're an X's and O's guy.
It's busted to, like, 6:30 in the mornings on Sunday, because all people want to talk about is story-wise and human interest. You don't have to be a former player, super expert analyst to do all that narrative stuff. So.
Right.
I think it is. I think it does. That speaks to the soap opera culture.
Right.
But also this idea that they want to exclude women from it, which goes back to the original thing, when you really shouldn't, because this is what it is. It's not box scores. It's who followed who on Twitter. And people refuse to admit that to themselves.
Yeah. I'm not 100%. I think there's an Instagram account, I think it's called Sideline Blues, where they were breaking down Duke basketball recruits. They were like, this guy liked this Duke Instagram thing, so that means he's going to go to Duke. And if this is legit. Like, these two guys, they're going to go because they like this picture. And I was like, wow, this is intense. But
dude, I've been in the commitment game. Like, Bleach Report blew open the commitment game with some of those videos.
Yeah.
And I think we backed off a little bit now, but I'm in the commitment game, and people for kids going to college, that's, oh, he followed this guy, and this guy's going here. Oh, he liked this one.
Yeah.
What is it? Getting questions from people like, hey, what does it mean that so-and-so liked this picture? And also, he visited there twice.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, I mean, what do you think it means?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's huge.
On another note, I always, you always keep me in check, and every now and then you get a random text from me, and it'll be about a black quarterback, and I'll say, is this guy good? And what's the deal with Heisman Trophy winner last year, Lamar Jackson? Do you think he's an NFL candidate? Do you think he can play quarterback in the NFL? And then, which I think you're going to say yes, because you did a great piece on him, like what, like a 2-minute piece of following his tape. And then why do people continuously try to discount this kid?
One, yes, I think he's an NFL prospect. I think he's probably the second best quarterback in this 2018 coming up draft, or eligible for the 2018 draft.
Okay.
Rosen's the only quarterback that I would take ahead of Lamar Jackson.
Where is Rosen from?
UCLA.
Okay.
He is outstanding. I think Josh Rosen is super special, but I think Lamar's super special. And he continues to get better year to year to year. And all this discussion of Sam Darnold, who's had problems with interceptions and some missed time, some very bad throws. Josh Allen, who people are still pushing as a first-rounder from Wyoming, who has been abysmal. He's been flat-out terrible, and people are still pushing him as a first-rounder. And I think it all boils down to Lamar Jackson. People have, and I think there's racism tied up to it. And I also think there's this pride element where people made a decision about Lamar Jackson when he was a freshman. They doubled down on it a year ago, riding the, he's a great college player, it doesn't matter, he won't be good in the NFL. And now as he turns the corner and proves, not just in spots like he did a year ago, but proves consistently game to game that he can play at the next level, I think people are doubling down on stuff they said before instead of reevaluating and changing. And I think it works against Lamar Jackson. I think it works for someone like a Josh Allen, who people decided was the next great thing, next Carson Wentz, even though he hasn't done anything to earn it.
Yeah.
And it's just been an interception machine. But because they made that call early, they're sticking with it. Now, I think they made that call because of the way Josh Allen looks. He's 6'4". He's 230. He can throw the ball a mile. They made that call for that reason. They made the Lamar Jackson might have to switch to wide receiver because of the way that he looks. And I think the doubling down is as much pride as it is anything else, because people don't like saying they're wrong.
Why do people taking race out of it? Why do they do that in sports? Why don't it just seems like majority of the people that have these takes, why don't they change? Like, why don't, when they see like variables, what the fuck am I trying to say? When they see their theories are proved wrong, why don't they change them? Is it just, like you said, it's pride, but is it, what else is it?
I think it's pride. And it's one of those things where it's the easiest thing in the world to send a tweet that says, I was wrong. I didn't expect X, Y, and Z to happen.
Yeah.
They got it done. Good for them. I did it yesterday a couple times. I was wrong about LSU. I didn't think they were going to be able to reverse course and play a quality football game, but they did, and that's a positive for those kids. Super easy to do. No problem.
Yeah.
And I guess these people just, they come out, they want to take hard stances, and they will die in a fire with them. And I don't get it. Because part evaluating these are constantly changing, constantly evolving. So everything moves consistently. And this idea that I said it, I admit it, I'm done, I'm not saying anything different, to me is just, that's how you miss on players. That's how you waste millions of dollars if you're an NFL GM. That's how you destroy a franchise if you're an NFL GM, because you made your mind up and you're unwilling to flinch, unwilling to evolve. As an evaluator, or you change with the changing picture. So
yeah.
I think that's a big part of it, is just this unwillingness to say, I was wrong. We went back, we looked at X, Y, and Z. This is what's happening. And I think that's why I did that Lamar Jackson video, was so that people could stop just listening to people say, he's not good, he's not good, he's not good, and then not show you any evidence of it.
Yeah.
Let me show you some evidence of why he's good and what he does well. And then change that picture for you so that you can understand that everyone that says he doesn't do X, Y, and Z, they are lying to you, and they also have not done the work and watched him play.
Yeah, that's because it just seems like that would make you more attractive as someone who evaluates athletes. And you say, oh, I was wrong about that kid. He does this, this, and this better than I thought he would. And then it would build more trust with your audience. So,
and that's, to me, that's the premise I try to operate on for two reasons. One, because I think it leaves me big windows to do content And even if it's just free Twitter content or paid content for that we do for Bleach Report, mm-hmm. leaves me big windows to say, hey, he's improved at X, Y, and Z. I didn't think he would be able to do A, B, C. And I think it also, it disarms people a lot. And that's something that for me is important because I don't have the energy to argue with these dumb idiots all day on Twitter. And it disarms people if you say, I was wrong about this, but they did this, 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 which I didn't think they were going to be able to do. And then all these dumb idiots that are like, oh, you suck. You picked out, you didn't pick LSU. Look what we did. And you say, I was wrong.
Yeah.
They got in a groove with Matt Canada. I love the way that they worked the some of those motions and the shifts on the offensive side of the ball. Thought the play calling was excellent. Didn't expect to get that. Man, good for them. Hopefully it continues. And now they don't have anything to say. They were ready to be mad all day.
Yeah.
But now you've disarmed them. And it's just a better experience on my end for Twitter if I just admit being wrong about something and then go from there.
Yeah, I just don't like, it just seems like, and because my focus mainly lies on these black quarterbacks, it just seems like that messes up their money. Is that true when they say these things? Like, was it?
I think it messes up. Like, yeah, it messes up.
Because, like, Bill, is it Bill Polian or Abe Polian?
Bill Polian.
Bill was saying, like, I don't think Lamar Jackson's a good quarterback. I don't think he's going to play in the NFL. And then I was like, I think you're racist.
Like, I would love to hear. The biggest problem for me, just as someone that works in this industry, the biggest problem for me is I would love to see what people are looking at. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of why I do video now and got out of writing, is because I can show you specifically what I'm looking at and why I think this. But every time we see this anonymous discussion, it's people never attach clips to it. They never attach anything with it. It's never a video where they show bad plays. It's always just some off the cuff, you know, comment that they're giving someone with no examples. And that's the most frustrating part to me. Show me your examples. Let me see the work. Show me, you know, just like in math class when you're a kid,
show your work.
Yeah. Show your work. And maybe I grew up, my mom's a math teacher, and so we always had to show our work.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where this comes from. But I need to see how you arrived at this conclusion, and I want to know if I can duplicate this experiment. That's what I want to do. Give me your science. Give me the scientific method. And I don't think enough people believe in that. And I think that hurts kids.
What do you think? So this morning when I woke up, I saw a tweet from Bleacher Report about this kid, Arizona backup quarterback Khalil Tate. He set the single game rushing record for QBs with 327 yards on 14 carries with 4 rushing touchdowns. So I was like, oh shit, black quarterbacks. And then someone right under that statement, right under that tweet, someone wrote, I bet he had a single mother.
That's messed up.
And then somebody wrote back, like, so there's a picture of Arsenio Hall. I guess this is Coming to America. Arsenio Hall,
yeah,
someone spitting out like alcohol or something, like a spit.
Yeah, that's from when they're on all those speed dates at the club and Coming to America.
Yeah, and then he says, yep. "This is actually a very involved father. Always showed up to games. Take that racism somewhere else." So there's people that are checking him, but it was just like off the rip. I'm like, damn. Yep. So
that's how people do.
So what happened? Do you know about this game? Do you know about? I'm sure you do, but like what? Like the consequences of what got this kid into the game? Like, why?
Does have a very involved father. I actually have talked to his mother a couple times. Khalil Tate, I have been a fan of since, we're going back to 2015. I saw him in Vegas. Thought he was one of the best quarterbacks out west. Mm-hmm. We actually did a video on him in 2015. That's how I connected with his mother.
Oh, nice.
And she saw the video, was like, thank you so much. We feel like he's not getting a lot of the exposure, some of the other guys are. And he actually, I think he scared a kid off from Arizona because he was good and another quarterback was going to go there and the other quarterback decided to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. He's a redshirt sophomore, outstanding. I mean, he can play with power. He's got great speed. He's still developing as a passer. But I've been a Khalil Tate fan for a while. Mm-hmm. His family is outstanding. But I also think in terms of speaking to the internet troll this. Like, Khalil Tate, I can talk about him all day. I think he's absolutely phenomenal. If they get some more pieces in Arizona, he's going to have a really good next couple seasons. As far as the comments of those, though, there's two things. One, I think a lot of people feel free to say how they really feel on the internet. Obviously, that's been discussed, that's been discussed everywhere all the time. I also think that there's this culture of trolls that build many like micro followings off of being early commenters. I mean, you see it in Donald Trump's tweets too.
Yeah.
Where people will immediately respond and then they'll make their own thread in his comments to get other people to read what they say. And sometimes it's outlandish, sometimes it's irrelevant, sometimes it's pertinent to the content, but a lot of times it's just them trying to get there so that other people, when you click on that tweet, you have to read what they said. And I think that's also part of this is where, hey, I'm going to say something ridiculous. Now I'm going to get other people to jump on what I say. And then it's just, that's how it keeps working. I see it time and time again.
Yeah. I was like, damn, just like off the rip. Yeah, I think I just get excited because it just seems like, okay, maybe there's another kid. And I just like, so I don't watch as much as I just kind of like everything around it. Like the stuff that you do, the stuff that like your people, like your colleagues do and stuff. And that's really how I get my information because most of the time I'm not really watching the games.
Yeah.
And then like, it just seems like, and then in college, when you lose, it's almost like the end of the world because they lost to Louisville, lost to NC State. Was it this past week, right?
Thursday, yep.
Yeah, and like they're like it made it seem like it's over. It's over for them. Like it's over for his career, like these kids' career. And it's just like it was just a game. Maybe they won't get the national championship, but what
they were never going to get the national championship. Yeah.
that's kind of what I thought. One of the things, what's the difference? How much of a difference is there between being ranked number 17 and being ranked 24?
None.
Okay,
it doesn't mean anything.
Okay, I just needed you to say it. Okay,
yeah, it doesn't mean anything. I think legitimately in college football, there's probably seven pretty good teams. Mm-hmm. Seven, and I use good far less liberally than other people do.
Okay,
I think there's probably seven very good, pretty good teams, and then everybody else is just okay. And then you have bad teams after those okay teams. Like I think Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, probably Washington, Penn State, Ohio State. Those are the good teams. Mm-hmm. TCU, I think I'm starting to put in there as the good teams, and then after that, you have teams with flaws that are too severe for them to overcome consistently.
Yeah.
And that's where you have those are teams that they're okay. They can be good on any given day, but that's where you have Oklahoma, who just lost to Iowa State because their defense is turning into pure garbage. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma State, who should have lost two games in a row, but was able to hold on against Texas Tech. You have those teams right there, Michigan State. They beat Michigan last night, but they're not very good. They just are. They're better than this Michigan team that has a ton of real issues. So I think everybody else kind of slots into there. Auburn is probably at the top of that. They're okay list, trying to move into the good territory because they finally got their pieces working on the offensive side of the ball. But yeah, once you go eight to twelve or thirteen, where we'll see Miami is going to be in that mix. Those teams are close. They're close to being very good teams. And then after you get to 14, the gap between teams 14 or 15 and 35 mm-hmm. is smaller than the gap between team 15 and team number 8.
Yeah. That's kind of how I felt. Like it's good. Is it just like, yeah, they're ranked, so they're some kind of good. But then
you got to sell that matchup to television.
Okay, see that was going to be my next question. And then it looks good, probably for the recruits, right? People that they want to bring in. Yeah,
absolutely. You can say we were ranked number 17, or we're in the top 25 for 6 weeks. But you never made it above 15, mm-hmm. and you didn't play anybody any good. But that's really good on your recruiting. Your recruiting propaganda. And it's really good for the games that you do play because they say, hey, top 25, blah, 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 is playing so-and-so. And it's good when you play away games because the away team is saying, hey, we got a matchup. We got a chance to knock off a top 25 team. So it works for all the other pieces, even though it doesn't mean a ton.
Gotcha. Now, let me ask you this. I also feel like just someone who's on the periphery of watching these games and just what I when I'm hearing on sports radio and on ESPN, to me it seems like there's a resurgence or like a renaissance, if you will, in the ACC. Is that true?
Yeah, there. Listen, the ACC. I would say that the resurgence and that renaissance happened a few years ago when they turned over coaches.
Okay.
And we're seeing the results of it play out now.
Okay.
Miami and Virginia are the most recent coaching turnovers, mm-hmm. and they're starting to win games. Now, Virginia's 4-1 for the first time since, like, I believe the 90s. So that's really, really good for them. Yeah. Miami is obviously undefeated. They just took down Florida State. That's mm-hmm. huge for them. But Dabo Swinney, he's a guy that got hired in 2008 when no one thought he should have the job. He was a joke in 2012 when he got blown out by West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And then he hired new coaches. He hired Brent Venables, a defensive coordinator. He hired some new coaches. They've been unstoppable for the last 4 or 5 years. Wow. Virginia Tech got Justin Fuentes in the last couple seasons. They are now coming into the modern era of offensive football while still maintaining that solid defense. They're a good football team. Duke, not as good as we thought they were going to be. I think they're a little dinged up, but also Virginia's better than we expected. But you look at North Carolina, they're in the tank. They're not good at all. Because they have their coach, and they're going to cycle through a coach again in the next couple of years because Fedora doesn't recruit very well, and he doesn't develop very well, and all the juice from before is all gone. He didn't have the quarterbacks. He didn't have the his offensive line's all going to leave, so we'll see what happens with him. NC State, though, they hired Dave Doran around the same time UNC got Fedora. He's finally got a football team that can ball out right now,
yeah.
and these guys can play. And they got three guys that should be, you know, day one, day two NFL draft picks on the defensive line. They got a guy in Jalen Samuel. I don't know if he's going to get drafted or not because he's 5'10", but he is the best-kept secret on the offensive side of the ball in college football, period.
Okay.
So they've got – there's a resurgence. Syracuse, they just beat Pitt. Syracuse, Orange is the new fast. Dino Babers has got those guys – Dino Babers has got them playing good football.
Yeah.
They pushed LSU. They were driving to, I believe, tie the game up or take the lead late in the fourth quarter, and LSU was able to get off the field, which was huge. Would have been a massive win for Syracuse, and then obviously we saw Troy take down LSU anyways, but that was big. Man, you've got those guys playing confident football. So the ACC is better than it has been. Mm-hmm. Florida State is down because of the lack of quarterback and the offensive line is struggling, but as a conference, it's healthier than it's been in a long time. And I think that's a testament to coaching hires and a real investment in the sport, which, you know, I don't think a lot of folks, myself included, thought the conference was going to get on a large scale because of the addiction to basketball.
Yeah. Yeah. I was glad to see that because I was just kind of noticing. I was like, wow, ACC is kind of coming back. Because I remember it used to be competitive. And I remember, yeah. like, when North Carolina was good, like Dre Bly and – who else?
Yeah.
Natrone Means, and that's only a good yeah. name. And Peppers, obviously. So I guess I want to shift a little bit to the NFL, and then we'll talk about pop culture shit. But I wanted to see like what you thought about the maturation of Deshaun Watson and like what how did you see this happening with him? Going into the pros, making that transition?
Deshaun Watson was my number two quarterback behind Deshaun Kizer.
Okay.
I felt Kizer had a higher ceiling because he is 6'4 and 230, and he can run, and he can throw the ball forever and all those things. Mm-hmm. Problem is he plays for the Browns.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Deshaun Watson is doing all the stuff I expected him to do. They've created an offense that he's comfortable working in, and he's going to expand that offense as he gets more comfortable with the speed and the pacing and understanding windows in the NFL game. But right now, they're letting him work. They're letting him roll out a little bit. They're working some run-pass options, and they're giving him some quick reads to make decisions instead of asking him to sit behind a sorry offensive line they've got. So, this is what I expected him to do. And I'm glad that he plays for a coach that is willing to adapt instead of just trying to force him to do what the coach wants to do. And I think that's a hallmark of a good coach. That's a big positive. And so I think Deshaun Watson is poised to, one, help Bill O'Brien keep his job.
Yeah.
And two, go into a quality NFL quarterback. And I think folks are seeing all the discussion about, well, his arm strength, blah, blah, blah. They're seeing that that's total is BS. It's not, he can get the job done. And that's a big plus. And I don't think there was ever a moment where college football was united and so remarkably aroused than when Deshaun Watson was balling out. Was that last weekend?
Yeah.
When he was crushing it. And I think people were so, college football, there's a mixed up relationship because most people that cover college football, they don't do anything with the NFL. They don't do NFL draft. They don't understand a lot of that stuff, and they hate it. There's a full-on outward hate of the NFL from a lot of college football people.
Why?
Because the NFL takes players that college football loved and guys they thought were great, and a lot of times they're ineffective at the next level.
Mm. Now, how much of that is a part of the system that they get drafted into, or just the player himself?
The player himself. It's the system that they're picked into. It's the fact that playing in the NFL is super hard.
Yeah.
It's way harder than college, way harder. It's the fact that college coaches aren't giving kids a lesson in football. My best friend spent 4 years with the Green Bay Packers, and he said, I didn't truly – he played for a really good coach that taught football very well in Butch Davis. Mm-hmm. He said, I didn't truly know football until my second year in the NFL. Like, in college, going to college is like majoring in football, but it's an easy degree. Go in the NFL, it's like getting your doctorate in football, where you have to know so much more, and there's so much more to know. College coaches don't have the time to teach it. They also don't have the want to teach it a lot of times because they can get by, keep their job, and make more money if they just have you do this little slice of a job instead of explaining the entire game as a whole. So I think that that's part of it. But I think college, to go back to it, college media is resentful of the NFL because they picked Mitch Trubisky, a one-year starter, over Deshaun Watson, who is a legend, the best player Clemson's ever had. Yeah. And folks are like, guys are making a mistake. You're telling me this kid can't play. I watched him play for 3 years. He can play. So they were the collective was thrilled that he was kicking behind. And there were so many I told you so's and pulling up old tweets of, see, I tried to tell the NFL Deshaun Watson was good. That the college football base was just drinking the tears of NFL scouts that passed on Deshaun Watson.
So why do you think the Bears didn't take him? Was it racial?
I think the Bears are idiots.
Is it just Chicago franchises for the most part? They don't want to pay anybody, or what? What is it? What's wrong with the Bears?
It's not even pay. The pay's slotted. I think they are full blown idiots. Let's not forget. Not only do they not draft Watson, they also are a football team that traded away a bunch to move up with San Francisco, when San Francisco didn't even want the player they picked. Like, they traded away their whole draft to get Mitch Trubisky when they could have just waited one more pick and got him anyway.
I think they're
inept.
The Urlacher years, I guess I was there for 5 years, and I think they went to the Super Bowl in 06 under Rex Grossman. And I don't know if I've ever told this story on the show before, but I was working at Best Buy at the time and while I was in grad school. And one time Rex Grossman came in to do a signing, and I'm a big guy. I was more slight. Sexier than I thought that I was back then. And I was just, you know, a big guy. But he looked at me like I was going to try to tackle him. Like, he just looked so skittish, you know, in real life. It's like, dude, I just want to take a picture of you or with you or something. I don't even know what – I mean, he thought that I was a defensive tackle or something. But I don't know.
Listen, man, he was like, listen, man, you look like a lot of these dudes that be tackling me all the time.
I know. He just looked – and I was a lot slimmer back then. But he looked like he just was afraid of the whole day. I don't know. But, I don't remember. I think that was like
the last time that they were decent. They had a good defense.
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know
what they're not great. I think they've got, I think they have some fundamental issues with the franchise. Mm-hmm. And I think that picking Trubisky over Watson, maybe he does pay it out and he's really, really good. That's fine. Great for them.
Yeah.
I think the bigger issue that – I think the clear bigger issue is that they traded away everything to get him because that is poor management. That's bad management in terms of just operating in the football space. That's bad management, and that's not how you win championships.
And then Kizer said last week that he kind of took – he felt like the most comfortable that he's been because I guess he
mm-hmm.
– I guess Hugh Jackson? Hugh Jackson had him like throwing down the field every play.
Which is what he's really good at, which is why I thought he had some issues at Notre Dame because they didn't throw down the field nearly as much as he probably wanted to.
Uh-huh.
But he has got a big arm. He's a vertical passer. So I think he's gonna be all I think he's gonna be fine.
And do you think and then we'll leave this do you think Dak Prescott is he it doesn't seem like he's in a sophomore slump, but how do you feel about him? How do you feel about what he did last year and you know, the path that he's on right now?
Well, last year he kicked down doors, and he was absolutely just playing gangbusters-type football. Their offensive line has some issues with the Cowboys right now.
Yeah.
So that's slowing him down a little bit. You mix in the fact that people are trying to take away his immediate read, so he has to wait and go through it. But, I mean, he's made a couple throws this season that are – you know, elite level, like just off the wall type throws. And I think that he's going to continue to get better. I think the big key, again, is the NFL's hard. You know, like nobody talks about it like that, though. Like, it's a super hard job. There's a reason most people don't last and most people don't make it. It's a hard job.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard. And I think because the culture of, maybe envy surrounding the sport, like, oh, I wish I could do that. I wish I could do that. And the whole idea of, well, why aren't you better? You should be better. I want my team to win. It get the idea that playing in the NFL, just being in it is hard. Being good at being in it is even harder. And being great at it is near impossible. Mm-hmm. Gets lost on a lot of people because all they want is just their team to win, and they don't realize every one of these dudes, it's so hard. Just week to week, for probably at least 30 to 40% of the league, all they want week to week is to make sure that they're still on the roster and that they can just go out and do the little thing they get asked to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's the reality of it.
Yeah.
It's hard. How many jobs do you know where everyone is looking to fire you almost every day?
Yeah, it's true.
Well, it's a hard life.
One of the places that I, for the most part, I've mentioned a bunch of times on the show when I do like text you about black quarterbacks. It was the funniest moment that I remember having with you is just like with EJ Manuel, who's gonna start for the Raiders this weekend, and like I was just like, hey man, I think they're just benching him because he's black, and you're just like, Chris, he's not good, and so now he's gonna start in place of Carr. Who like they're like, oh yeah, his spine is fucked up. He'll be back in 2 weeks. Yeah, he's not gonna be back.
He's really hurt.
Yeah, he's really messed up. How do you feel about I just want your educated opinion, thoughts on this whole Kaepernick situation. Do you think he'll ever get play again in the league again?
I don't know. I hope he does, but I don't know. I think that there's obviously entrenched racism.
Yeah.
And I think that there's also a very real fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it relates back to people's personal lives, but this is on a grander scale. I think there's a fear from the owners of what these conservatives would do if they're the team that signed them.
Mm. Yeah.
I think Mara for the Giants, he mentioned that the reason why they're not going to sign Kaepernick was because of the backlash from fans. He's the first guy that said it out loud.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a very real thing. Now, keep in mind, they don't give a shit about the backlash from women, from minorities. They don't care about any of that backlash.
Right.
The backlash they care about is white conservative male. That's what they worry about losing. Mm-hmm. And that's I think that is more than anything at this stage fueling the decision to not bring him in. The fear of losing their Ford truck base, the fear of losing their, you know, their pickup trucks and light beer base,
right,
terrifies them. And I think that relates back to everyday American, the inability, the fear to discuss racism with their own family, mm-hmm, because they don't want to rock the boat with pickup truck light beer dad or pickup truck light beer grandpa. I think this is it on the same thing on a grander scale.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like when the owners knelt and stuff, I felt like that, I think it's over. I was like, it's over. Like you,
yeah, they co-opted the whole thing.
Yeah. And it just, I was like, okay, now nobody should even give a shit anymore. Like either you shouldn't even worry about it anymore.
They made it about Trump, yeah, which it wasn't about. Mm-hmm. They made it about Trump. Then they're like, we're united. Or what? They kept saying we're united. United against what? Yeah. Against Trump? Because you guys are billionaires arguing with each other. That's what you're united against.
Exactly.
You're not going to let you don't want him coming in your house, putting his feet on your coffee table. Mm-hmm. That's way different than wanting black kids to stop getting shot.
Right.
It's way different. It's not the same thing, but that's what you made it about.
Yeah. It's disappointing. And that can't be. Now people are saying that's the reason why the numbers are down for the league. And
so it's not.
It's, what do you think it is? Because to me, like, sometimes the NFL's kind of boring.
Yeah, I think that, I'll give you a little background. I don't know what I'm going to be doing in this industry. You and I talked about it when we went out to dinner.
Yeah.
I have no idea what I'm going to be doing forever in this industry. Mm-hmm. But I know that I've got gray in my beard and, mm-hmm, I'm 33 almost. So I don't have much longer.
Ripped. What? You're 33.
I don't think I have much longer. So
longer
I understand
what?
That.
Like doing. Doing
it's being in front of the camera.
Oh, okay. You're not hot. You don't think you're hot enough to stay?
I don't think I'm going to continue to resonate with the younger generation the way that I do.
Okay.
No matter how many 2 Chainz concerts and Future lyrics and Lil Uzi Vert I listen to, I don't know that it's going to keep me hot in the streets for life. But so I've been working a lot harder at working in the industry background.
Okay.
And so, you know, like I read, you know, DigiDay and Inside Biz, Business Insider, and I love reading Ad Age and stuff. And people have done studies on this. Like, and I think that some of them are paid, which is why everyone doesn't get to see them. Mm-hmm. But the NFL is very strong. That Sunday afternoon game has become America's game.
Yeah.
It moved from Monday night to Sunday night, and then it went from Sunday night to Sunday afternoon, becomes the key game for America. Fox did a great job of doing that. What do they got this week? Cowboys and Green Bay Packers? Mm. They're never going to have a better game than that. So people are pointing out Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football, both of which had humongous margins of victory. So bad football games.
Yeah.
They're pointing at those to say ratings are down because people aren't watching bad football games. That's how it works. That's what happens. And they're ignoring that Sunday afternoon game continues to trend upwards. So a lot of it has everything to do with bad football games, uncompetitive games, games that are super low scoring. If the game is 17-14, people don't want to watch it.
Right.
If the game is a blowout, people don't want to watch it. And people are trying to politicize that, but the fact of the matter is, it has everything to do with bad football.
Yeah. Like the Thursday night game, it's like, oh, who? Like it used to be like towards the end of the season you'd get a Thursday night game, but now
yep,
every week and, yeah, maybe every
week.
They've got the cool uniforms, but it's like, this shit, it's not good.
It's It's professionals being asked to perform on short rest.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine, and then you're not a big baseball fan, but can you imagine in baseball, if you asked, you know, Steven Strasburg, if you asked Justin Verlander, Chris Sale, hey, buddy, so you know how you usually get a week of rest? What do you think about 2 days? Can you go for me? Appreciate it. They would never ask someone to do that because it's functionally insane, and yet they ask the NFL to do it every week.
Yeah,
and they also wonder why the game's not growing internationally. Dummies, you send the worst version of football over to England every other week or whatever it is. You can't keep doing this.
Yeah, and I think the NBA is trying to do that now, like have lesser games or shorten down the travel because you want this product to be good. Like people are putting a lot of money into this, and people. The working people, the hard work, the Ford, like a rock, all those people are coming in and bringing their kids. Oh, Kyrie's not playing? Well, I just spent $600 for me and my family to come to this game, and Kyrie's not playing? Like, you mean to tell me he's tired? Like, yeah, he's fucking tired. You can't do – I don't know.
It's tough, and I think that sitting guys out is something that I don't have a problem with because you want to win champions. But here's the thing. Kyrie plays game 78 because some dumb idiot fan wants to see him play game 78.
Right.
Who cares? He didn't get credit for that. He only gets credit for putting rings on somebody's fingers.
Exactly.
You know? That's it. He didn't get credit for playing. LeBron doesn't get credit for playing game 1 through 82. He didn't get credit for that. He only gets credit. The NBA season's 82 games, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't get credit for game 1 through 82. He might have a sick highlight reel of stuff that he's done in those 82 games, but he only gets credit for winning in the finals. That's it. And so he needs to position himself to do it.
Yeah. And I do want to ask you, as we were talking, I was thinking about, do you watch Last Chance U? Have you ever seen it before?
I do not watch it. I don't watch any sports programming that's not actual games.
Okay.
With the exception of, I used to watch some Highly Questionable because Bo was on, and I'll watch, you know, Bo's new show whenever that hits.
Yeah.
But for the most part, for me, I work every day from 7 until 4.
Okay.
Doing sports stuff.
Yeah.
And I need a break, and... So I need a break on my alone time. Like that's my TV time with the wife, and she is also not interested in watching sports stuff.
Yeah, I don't blame her, and I don't blame you either. I just wanted to see if you had any thoughts on it.
I know about it, and they just arrested one of the kids that was on there for murder.
I know, fuck.
So, I think the interesting thing for me will be. Not the show itself. I know they changed it to, what is it, Coffeeville or somewhere?
I think so.
They moved locations. But I think the interesting thing for me will be how they start to vet these JUCO guys. I think it's going to be very interesting because he was on Indiana's campus.
He was what on Indiana's campus?
He played football for Indiana.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you look at D.D. Westbrook, who... you know, helped lead Oklahoma to a pretty quality season, was a top five guy for the Heisman. Mm-hmm. And then it came out that he had beat his girlfriend, pregnant girlfriend, if I'm not mistaken. And that came out after, which is something that got lost in the shuffle as he went to JUCO. Mm. So I think that they're going to have to do a better job of vetting some of these guys because you can't have for real criminals on college campuses.
Yeah.
Like, you got to, and you can't have guys... with especially, and I'll go all the way to Aaron Hernandez, you can't have guys that might be, that are, you know, future big-time criminals in the making. I think coaches are going to try to do a better job of that. It's, you know, like, not to say that they won't have guys that could go one way or the other on campus, but,
yeah.
I mean, if you see a streak that's pointing toward, if you see a, you know, a path that's pointing towards not the NFL, not graduating college, a lot more of, hey, this is bad. And I think a lot of, I think, I'm just curious to watch how it changes the betting process with things that are coming out because it's one of the more lenient processes in high school recruiting. Mm-hmm. You get to know the coach and the player. You get to know all these guys so much. You get to know you know them a lot better than you do from JUCO. You know, you verify a lot of those things. I think for JUCO, it's just interesting that it's a little more wild, wild west, because nobody that follows recruiting is heavy into JUCOs to do some of the vetting that they do for high school players.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I just, because you, I mean, you still answered a lot of, you kind of just answered stuff that I wanted you to answer anyway without having to see the having seen the show anyway, because I just kind of wanted an opinion on that. It's already, you're already exploiting these kids, and then you do it, now you're doing it with the TV show.
But I also think that gives some of those dudes exposure that
yeah
they may not have gotten. So
that I do watch. I'm not going to say that I'm not. I'm not like I'm in it too. But and then Lane Kiffin's taking a lot of those kids.
Yes, he is.
Yeah,
he Lane Kiffin needs to get out of Boca Raton, and any way that he can do that, he will.
What? Okay. This shit, I had seven last questions about football that I wanted to ask you, but I can't help it. I mean, because when I'm talking about sports on the show, like, I have a limited knowledge as a fan of sports, but like, just really somebody that can really speak in depth about it, I have to take advantage. What is the fascination with Lane? What is it about Lane Kiffin that allows him to fail upwards?
He's a really good football coach.
Okay. All right.
He's a really good football coach. Like, damn good. Offensive mind, one of the best offensive minds in college football right now. No joke about it. Like, not even making a joke. The guy's amazing.
Okay.
I love the way he works. He works shifts. He works motions. He works route designs. He's a very good teacher of football. He got Jonathan Crompton into the NFL. Mm-hmm. He was quarterback at Tennessee. He took an undermanned Tennessee team and almost beat Alabama by taking the air out of the game and creating opportunity for success. I mean, this guy's a really good play caller. He's still working on growing up, working on how he handles the media. I think he thought that I'm so good, I don't have to play nice with you.
How old is he? He's like a 40-year-old kid. Let me look.
Yeah, no, I'm not calling him a kid.
That's just me making a joke. He's 42. Yeah. He's a 42-year-old kid. All right.
For sure.
Yeah.
But the big thing for him is he thought, I'm so good, I don't care about you guys. Mm-hmm. And he's realizing, I got to play nice with the media, or these guys are going to kill me.
Why didn't it work in Alabama, him as the OC?
Because he's good. I mean, it worked up until when it didn't. Lane Kiffin is of the opposite school of thought of Nick Saban.
Okay.
Nick Saban is, I've got my 17 points, I feel good, let's get the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Lane Kiffin, dating back to when he was at Tennessee, I didn't watch it till when he was at the Raiders, but I know when he was at Tennessee and I know when he was at USC, Lane Kiffin is, I want to make the next guy's Sunday morning hell. Mm. I want to make his Sunday hell. I want to make him sweat. Nick Saban hides stuff until he needs it. Lane Kiffin shows you everything so that you waste your practice time preparing for stuff he's not even thinking about doing. Mm. So he will run. He wants to. It didn't work out at Alabama because he wants to run plays. He wanted to get his quarterback reps throwing the ball down the field. Nick Saban didn't like that because it showed that they were vulnerable and they couldn't do it. Nick Saban wanted him to just shut up and run the football. Lane Kiffin wanted to work some shifts, some motions, things that confused players into getting false starts and delay of games and illegal formations, because he wanted to be able to do those things at critical moments. And Nick Saban was like, cut out the BS. Let's go out there. Just hand the ball off.
Yeah.
And that they butted heads. But he's also a good teacher, which is why Blake Sims was able to get to a national championship game. Or national championship, which is why Blake Sims was able to get to a college football semifinal. It's why Jake Coker won a national championship. It's why Jalen Hurts was able to get them to the playoff into a national championship game, because Lane Kiffin taught these guys how to play football, and he called plays that operated within what they were comfortable doing, and he pushed them just enough to create some big plays for that offense.
Okay.
He's really good, though. He's really, really good. He just is of the complete and total opposite of Nick Saban, because here's the thing. Sunday morning is when your coaches are watching film and they're chopping stuff up and figuring it out. If you get done with a Nick Saban game, at the end of the day, you might have one or two plays that are a little bit different. Like this year, you have a couple plays that were a little bit different. The throwback they ran, I think it was against Vandy, was exceptional, and a couple other plays. And then you're good. You're like, we know we got to stop power. We know we got to stop this inside zone. We got to stop this. Okay. And then they out-muscle you, and then you get to the game, and if he feels like he's in a dogfight, Nick Saban will break out a special play that you weren't expecting. It'll be uncovered. They'll score a touchdown on it. They did it against Clemson with O.J. Howard in the first national championship game. Lane Kiffin, he wants you to spend all day Sunday. You got to watch three games of film. He wants you to spend all day Sunday trying to find a play that he did here and where was it before. Is he going to do that to us? Make sure we put it on the sheet to practice against because it's genius. He wants you to spend that whole day sweating out stuff as he comes up with a bunch of new things that you also haven't seen for the next game.
Got you. Okay, that makes sense now. Now that enlightened me on that. What predictions do you have for the Heisman? Are you able to talk about that yet? Like who's your projected winner or your finalist? And then who do you see taking the national championship this year?
I don't vote for the Heisman. I actually got cut out of a CNN Heisman video because they said the award is trash. So
why'd you do that?
I mean, I just think it's a garbage award. You're gonna tell me? You're telling me? Well, here's what you want me to believe: that the best player in college football is always a quarterback. Really? Not a defensive lineman, not a linebacker, not a defensive back, not an offensive lineman, not a running back or a wide receiver, only a quarterback. That's insane. You're going to tell me that Jadeveon Clowney wasn't the best player in college football when he was playing?
That would be hard to not say that.
Bingo. It's insane.
He's just starting to ball out now.
Yeah. It's insane. The idea that he's not the best player is criminally insane. No one would ever say that. So I that's what happened when I did that little shoot for them. They didn't like that, and I don't think probably Heisman didn't like that, which is fine. I think Saquon Barkley is your lead dog right now for the Heisman. Baker Mayfield just lost, so he's set himself back. Barkley didn't have a good game, but as people only watch stat sheets, it looks like he played okay against Northwestern, and they blew him out. Mm-hmm. So people will find ways to rationalize that, even though he did not play a good game. Northwestern really shut him down, but he's the lead dog right now. Goodness gracious, I'm trying to think who else. Nobody's given Jalen Hurts any love for Alabama or Kelly Bryant any love for Clemson. But as they go through, they may be up there. I think JT Barrett's going to reinsert himself in a big way here soon with some games against Penn State, Michigan State. He'll be back in the running.
Okay.
And probably will be in New York City. Sam Darnold's still in the mix for a lot of people, despite the interceptions. They're very ready to vote for him. And if he's hanging around, he's going to have a great opportunity to win it. But I think if Saquon Barkley can beat Michigan or Ohio State, I think certainly then he's going to be the guy that takes on the trophy.
Okay. What about who do you think is going to take it all? Like the who's going to win the chip?
I'm a Clemson guy. I have been for the last 3 years. I've picked them to win, and I feel good about that. I thought Florida State was going to win it this year preseason, and then their quarterback goes down, and their offense is in pieces, so they're out. I think Clemson probably has the inside track. I think their defensive line is better than Alabama's. I think their wide receiving group is better than Alabama's. I think offensive line, they're about even. Both teams still allow a little bit of pressure to get to the quarterback. We'll see how healthy Kelly Bryant is. But I think we've got a real opportunity to have a rematch of the last 2 years. I think Clemson can settle that rubber match and make it 2-1 against this Alabama football team.
Cool. I think that would be dope to see.
Hey, Clemson's outstanding.
Yeah, that would be great. So I want to shift gears here, and one of the main reasons why I wanted you on, I didn't expect to have such a great sports-heavy conversation with you, but I take it as they come. It's just what happens. The main reason I wanted you on here because I was on Twitter Friday morning, and I saw that you were going to see The Mountain Between Us with Idris Elba and Kate Winslet, which shocked the hell out of me. I was excited to see it, but mostly on the timeline, I was like, man, I ain't going to see that shit.
because he's with a white girl, blah, blah, blah. I thought it was one of the most disrespectful trailers that you could put on a movie for any black woman going to see Girls Trip.
Was it in Girls Trip?
Yes, when I saw it, the first time I heard of it was when I went to go see Girls Trip, and I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna see this, but this is also very disrespectful to the black women going to see Girls Trip.
Oh wow!
So I had a cousin that saw the movie. She's down in Maryland, and she's like, oh yeah, I went to go see it, and she was like, it was all right. So I was excited that you said. I was like, hey, let's talk about it. What are your thoughts? And I guess we can just spoil it. We can talk about it. Why not?
Yeah. If they haven't, Nolan is like waiting with bated breath to go see that movie.
Yeah.
I liked it. I thought it was just fine. I will say, I probably would have thought it was beyond fine. I thought it was, you know, okay, pretty good. Mm-hmm. If my theater experience wasn't just my own personal hell. I get there, assigned seating. I'm in D1. Uh-huh. I don't like people walking in front of me, and I don't like walking over people to get to my seats, and I want to sit on the aisle, and
yeah.
I sit there. I got 3 empty seats next to me. Then I only have 2 empty seats next to me because some lady just sat in D13, and these old ladies had to move her out of the way, so she came and sat over there. Then somebody was like, hey, you're in my seat. She had to move somewhere else, and movie starting, we're in the airport, and this white couple comes in, and they sit right next to me. Then I hate it. And then I had to move like my stuff off the seat and put on the floor. Then the guy took his shoes off and had his feet like angled towards me. And I was like, I hate you. I hate you so much. You're going to make me hate this movie.
What kind of theater is this?
It's an AMC. I only go to AMC. I'm brand loyal all day.
Yeah.
It's got the reclining seats and, you know, the wide back thing, the whole deal.
What time of day is it?
10:30 in the morning.
And people are just like in the fucking way like that?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
On a Friday morning. I was so mad. I was hot.
Oh, so you, like, do you sit in the back?
15 minutes. I sit right in the middle. Okay. It goes from A all the way up to F. I sit at D usually, which is towards the middle.
Gotcha.
And D, middle, up, halfway up, all the way to the right or all the way to the left, depending on where other people are sitting.
Yeah.
Because I do not like people sitting directly in front of me or directly behind me or directly beside me, although I lost that battle.
Damn, that sucks, man. And they, what, because it wasn't a sold-out theater, was it?
No, there was other seats. There were other seats, and I was like, why would you take this sit with me? This is so bad.
That's so weird that they would do that. I always sit in the back when I can.
Yeah, I just feel like people will think I'm a weirdo back there, like doing gross stuff.
Oh, I don't. I like how you just like put that on me. I was expecting to see that at 5 o'clock, but I had an audition, and, mm-hmm. I went into the city, and I went to the audition. I was like, oh, okay, I can make it. I can make it and see at 2 o'clock. I was like, that's even better. So they opened up a new AMC dine-in theater near me, and they've got have you ever been to one of those? Like a
One with what? MacGuffins?
I know. Yeah. With MacGuffins.
Yeah. My theater has MacGuffins.
Okay.
It's never open when I go to the movies.
Okay. Cause I know you don't really, you're not a fan of movie theater food.
No.
But I was pleasantly surprised by their nachos. And they call them like ultimate nachos. And then Friday I got a burger. They didn't give me enough fries, but it was okay. It was okay.
Okay.
It wasn't.
I don't.
It wasn't.
Do they have like little table that you pull out and eat?
Yeah. Yeah. Just like a little tray thing. It's okay.
No, I'm a popcorn only guy. I'm firmly against a lot of like the studio movie grills where there's waitresses in and out.
Yeah,
it bothers me so much. Like, it's one thing if you get your food and then bring it in and sit down, I can live with that.
They do that.
I just don't have to get it. But people that are delivered, like the food delivery just takes me completely out of the movie.
It's not that bad. Like with this AMC, I will say they kind of got it down to a science because you order it And then someone will bring it into you within like a little after the preview start. And it wasn't bad. Like it's not like maybe like an Alamo Draft House.
Right. Where something. People are just in and out the whole time, pushing the little button with the light on. Yes. I hate that.
It's not like that. And plus, even I would go there without like eating in there. Like they've got their like free movie Tuesday, like their $5 Tuesdays.
Right. Yep. But
the theater's really fucking, they're really nice.
Probably. The one thing I've noticed is, and have you noticed this, but the theaters aren't bumping the AC like they used to.
They aren't? I didn't notice it with this one.
I've been very warm the last few movies that I've gone to.
Yeah, you should tell them. You say, yo, y'all need to turn the AC up.
Okay, so back to the movie. I thought it was good. Like, I liked it, and I'm enjoying it. I find myself enjoying it more the further I am removed from the guy with his shoes off that was using his cell phone
That can really mess your experience up when there's somebody next to you talking, or it's just...
Yep. He talked to his girl the whole time. They were just, oh, my God, and I was like, I hate you. I hope you follow me on Twitter, because I'm going to bash you.
That's crazy, man. I hate you. I hate that, too.
I hate you. So... I liked it. I thought my big takeaway is, one, when you got this caliber of actor, actress in there, I just wanted them to have more to do.
Yeah.
More to do. Like, I thought there was, I appreciate like the physical acting that they had to do for this, especially her with like the broken leg or whatever, which healed remarkably fast when she got back from wherever. when she got back to the city, her leg was like healed instantly. But I wish they had more to do, like in terms of talking to each other. There was so much nonverbal, and I didn't need exposition of them explaining it. But I did think that as they made this a love story, which I didn't even realize until way later, even after they had sex, I still wasn't thinking this was a love story. I was like, wait, what is happening? They think they're going to die, and they want to have sex one last time. I get it. Okay, great.
Yeah.
But as it became, like, I wish there was more, like, angst and yearning. And I know they tried to show it with these, like, they tried to show everything in montage instead of in acting. And you have, use a montage when your actors stink.
Right.
Use real acting when the actors are good.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. I think when you have this caliber of actors in Winslet and Elba, like, it's just kind of like, use them. And this would have been a lesser movie if they weren't in it. Like, if they weren't in it, I wouldn't go see this.
Same here. Would not have gone and seen it at all.
Yeah.
Like no chance.
Like, if it was Miles Teller and Emma Stone, what am I saying? What am I saying?
You would definitely go see that.
I would be seeing that. What the fuck am I saying? I was just trying to go for a joke, and it did, and it made me a fraud. It made me fraudulent at saying, of course I'm seeing Emma Stone in whatever she's in.
If it was some people you've never heard of, you wouldn't go see it.
It would probably be something that I would like watch on cable and be like,
I'm also upset that this movie is almost essentially Hatchet by Gary Paulson. Like, the pilot has a stroke. I think in Hatchet, the pilot has a heart attack. Then they crash. He only has a hatchet, has to survive by himself. Like, that part kind of took me out of the movie for a second. I was like, wait a second now. This is Hatchet with two people. This is Hatchet with two people.
What is Hatchet? I have not heard of that.
It's a book by Gary Paulson. I think he's a young adult or children's author. Okay. He wrote Hatchet. He wrote The Knife. I think The River. It seems like books that you read when you're like probably fourth or fifth grade about like, it's like the same as like, what is it? Gene Craighead, George, My Side of the Mountain, like style book.
I'm looking at the cover. That cover looks familiar, but I've never read that.
Dog Song he wrote as well, I think.
Okay.
I know my YA lit, man.
Okay. Now, I thought that what I initially thought, I was like, Idris is going to die. He's going to die. I thought it was going to be like Get Out Arctic Edition. but I'm just watching it because it's Idris and Kate Winslet is great. So it's like anytime she's around somebody in nature or something, she's going to live and the other guy's going to die. And when he got caught in that bear trap, I was like, fuck. I think I made like this audible noise where I was like, I was like, ah. I was like, or I said like, oh, shit.
And I said out loud, those are illegal.
Those those bear traps are illegal.
Just involuntary. Like, those are illegal.
It's kind of like, it kind of made me think of, I thought there was going to be more wildlife.
Yeah, because they showed the cougar 1,000 times in the trailer.
Yeah, I was like, oh shit, but she just shot it in the eye with a flare gun.
You can't kill a cougar with a flare.
Maybe did he get freaked out? The cougar like get freaked out and just die because of it, or
I don't know. It went in his mouth and like burned his body from the inside out, I don't think he's gonna die.
Yeah, that was pretty. And that dog survived it and shit, like
insane. Oh, by the way, what were they feeding the dog?
I don't know.
And why didn't they eat the dog?
Well, did they hint at that at all?
I didn't even think they hinted at it.
Okay, yeah, maybe I was like, are they gonna eat the dog? I don't know. I thought like I was just like, okay, this is because somebody asked me, they were like, oh, is this a date movie or can I just see it for $5? I was like, definitely it's a date movie, but if you can see it for cheap, then see it for cheap. Like it's not.
Yeah.
It's just my brain wasn't primed to go watch Blade Runner 2049.
My brain was primed, but that theater was packed.
Yeah, even at 10:30 in the morning?
Yep.
Wow.
The theater had like, I'm going to explain something. Packed to me means it has more than 10 people. Hang on, I'm not done. On the reserve, like if you look at the reserve seats and there's more than 10 people.
Yeah.
Especially for a first weekend showing. If it has more than 10 people, then that means you're going to have 20, 30 people in that theater.
Oh.
Because there's a bunch of dumb idiots that don't buy tickets online.
Yeah.
And so, like, there were 7 people, including myself, when I bought my ticket to The Mountain Between Us. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah, me? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just heard things tumbling.
No, I think it's just probably this old chair that I'm sitting in squeaking.
So when I saw The Mountain Between, there were 7 people in that theater. I get there, and there's 20-something people there. Wow. Blade Runner had, I think, 15, 17 people already had bought tickets,
mm-hmm.
and all my prime zones were already taken anyways. And so I was like, oh, this is going to be a zoo. And then when I get there, there's a bunch of people in line buying tickets to Blade Runner, and then a couple and buy tickets to The Mountain Between Us. So I know to stay away from that.
Yeah.
So, and it was 3 hours long. The Astros played at 2. I got there. It's 11. The movie actually starts at 11 o'clock. A 2-hour movie is going to get me home at 1. No big deal. A 3-hour movie is going to get me home closer to 2. And guess what? I don't want to miss the Astros in the playoffs. So
yeah.
It worked out perfect.
Yeah, I think maybe I'll go on Tuesday and see it.
Nice.
I think maybe I'll, because I saw where everybody's like raving over it, and then Rod said like C-. I was like, oh shit. I was like,
ooh.
So I don't know. I'm not a big sci-fi guy anyway.
Neither am I.
And I don't mind them, but it's like not the first thing that's gonna make me be like, oh shit, I gotta see this. Because yep. I kind of would see Flatliners because Ellen Page is in it and Kiersey Clemons is in it. But
yeah,
even though it's like even though it's just got trashed in the reviews, but I'm trying to take advantage of this $5 Tuesday. So if I
go ahead. I have been thinking about going to see Flatliners too, but I just can't get over the hump. That's how bad it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I just have to take advantage of it. So maybe I'll see it. Maybe I'll see Blade Runner on Tuesday. What else about this movie? Yeah, I just thought it was just like a grown-up adult, you know, like an adult movie.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know, they're in these. I just was just worried that Idris was going to die, and I didn't want him to die.
I'm right there with you. I like the movie. I would recommend the movie. It's casual. It's under 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's easy. There's nothing. There was no moment in there that made me like cringe or feel even uncomfortable. Even though you know the stakes are high, the worst thing is you're worried that Idris Elba's going to die.
Yeah.
And we're already telling you that he doesn't. So you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about the interracial aspect of it?
Good. Fine. Good. I mean, literally, like, I wish there was more. Like I said, I wish there was more to the love story.
Yeah.
I wish when they were out there,
mm-hmm.
we could see them building that.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like he was just like, I wish there, a couple things. One, I wish there was more of just the love story. I wish there was also more of him becoming human.
Gotcha.
I mean, this could have been a story about a guy who had already lost his wife and was hardened against the world and viewed the heart as only a muscle.
Yeah.
Becoming human again through this experience and connecting with another person the way he hasn't connected with someone in a long time.
Yeah.
And they didn't have enough of that because they kept showing these dumb montages.
Yeah, like they had to show us that they were falling in love.
Yeah, and then it just wasn't. And then
they're telling us because they're, and it's just like, yeah, we can see that, you
we
know?
We can see, just show me more. And then I wish I got to see more of her and her husband.
Yeah.
Like, They didn't do enough of that. I didn't think they did enough of that at all. And I thought they let, like, even the way that he worded his line when they were, I guess that's when they were separating. Like, I realized after the fact, because he says, I will always love you even if a piece of you doesn't come back. And I was like, oh, so he's like in it for the long run.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, except that's not, I guess what happened. There was stuff that they cut stuff out and then they added stuff in. Like, it wasn't a long movie. It felt like it had to fight to get to the 108 minutes or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have just kept in the parts where there's acting in it. Just show me the acting.
Yeah, that's true. I think it could have, it would have served the, maybe I think it's just an issue with the script.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I 100%. It's the issue with the script and direction, and maybe editing, depending on what they did and did not shoot.
Yeah.
But it just—I don't think it's a problem with two actors that we know are rock solid. Yeah. I think it's a problem with everybody else and them not having anything to do.
Yeah, because it's just like having a mediocre script with really good actors. They're going to elevate it. But they're going to only elevate it so much,
yep.
You know,
and that's exactly how I saw it.
Cause what I thought about it, I kind of thought about, like, it's not on the same level as Room. You know, have you seen Room with Brie Larson?
Yeah.
Heavy fucking movie. But that was like two movies in one, where it was like this situation where she's in there, she's trapped with her son in this
yep.
room. And then there's the aftermath, and the aftermath, I think the aftermath was a little for The Mountain Between Us was just kind of, it just wasn't as good as that one.
Yep.
I mean,
they just kind of threw it together.
Yeah. And I thought that it was going to be a little, I guess maybe see a little more, but we only got to see a little bit of it. I would have liked to seen her break up with that dude, or I would have liked to seen, like,
right.
you know, them.
See the arguing, like, Show me. I want to see them not connecting, you know, like
yeah.
not connecting, not touching, not working out. Show me some of that so that one, Kate Winslet can just act.
Yeah.
Because she's so good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And two, show, like, at least we got to see a little bit of Elba. Like, show me more of him not being able to do surgery anymore. Like, they're like, we'll show he can't do surgery by leaving a bandage on his hand.
Yeah, see him like, fuck, I can't do this anymore. He just says it in, like, it's just kind of like expository where it's like, I can't do that anymore. So
yeah,
I'm just
show me how he's taken that. Again, to me, it goes back to being human, and show me this interaction with how this interaction with this woman changed his entire life. To the point now, he also works in patient therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we're missing all this actual good stuff. What are you doing? You guys are ruining it.
I would have rather liked to have cut some of the mountain stuff and then built on to the end a little more.
I think they could have just cut some of these montages and built up to the end.
Yeah, that, I think, yeah.
I think from the mountain stuff, it also didn't feel, and I guess maybe this is because I'm a Naked and Afraid viewer and dual survival viewer.
Yeah.
It never felt, they didn't actually look like they were dying.
So you never thought that they could die? You never, like, you're just like, ah, they're going to make it.
Like, an accident could kill them, which is what the bear trap was. But they didn't, like, their faces weren't, like, sullen. They never were even dirty.
Is it because they're hot? Like, it's just because they're two good-looking people where it's just like...
They were. It's not even that they were good-looking. Like, they weren't even dirty. They weren't dirty. Like, Kate Winslet's face, like, she is white, like, porcelain, like, she's white.
Alabaster, and yeah.
She's never dirty in the whole movie.
You were, tell the listeners what you said to me when we were texting.
Yeah.
Like, the sex scene where you're just like, ah, they were probably all dirty. They didn't take a shower.
They were so filthy. They would have been so dirty. Yeah. And I don't get, also, did you not think this movie had a big problem with time?
Yeah, like, because at certain points it would be like, oh, we've been here 3 weeks. We've been a while 3 weeks. And how long were they actually gone? Was it a month?
They never tell us.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever told us how long they were gone. And then they never tell us how long she's back before they meet up again.
It just shows her, like, trying to call him and him not picking up. Let's see. This got a 46% on my Rotten Tomatoes. Okay.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. 51% liked it. Like, the fans liked it.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. Damn. Richard Roper from the Chicago Sun-Times. At one point, you almost start rooting for the elements to win out just so these two characters would just shut up. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, man.
It wasn't that. I just thought it was just okay. Like, I was like,
yeah.
I was entertained. Like, I like both the actors. Idris didn't die. I'm good. Like, I just didn't want the penalty. Like, there would be a penalty for him to be with a white woman in this movie. That's just kind of like... I didn't want it to be on that bullshit. I just wanted, like, he happens to be with this woman, and they're in this situation, and then they, whatever. That's all.
I liked it. I liked the movie. I liked that, like, he saved her, she saved him.
Yeah.
In the end, they saved each other. I thought they could have done it better, but, I liked it. Like, it had all the themes that I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. It just didn't do them. It didn't do them very well, which is why I said 50%, not even 70%.
Yeah. What have you seen this year that you've enjoyed in the theater? Just you? Do you normally hit up the movies on a Friday? Like,
yeah, I'm back at it since the season started. Baby Driver probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was good.
Baby Driver is probably my favorite for this year. I'm trying to think what else I saw. The problem is, when I was on the road early in the year, we went to the movies that weren't on Stubbs.
Okay.
So I don't have all my whatchamajigs. The ticket stubs don't show up like that.
Yeah.
So I can't remember everything else I saw. I missed Dunkirk, which that I wish I got to see that one.
I thought it was.
Not good.
I need to see it again because I fell asleep a few times.
Oh, okay.
not because it was bad, but just because I was just exhausted.
Yeah, I didn't see Dunkirk. That's the one I regret not seeing. And I went to go see Wonder Woman, but the theater broke, so I haven't seen that either. But all the rest of the superhero movies outside of Wonder Woman, I'm pretty cool with not seeing at all. So
not even Spider-Man?
No, I'm good on it.
Dude, that was, to me, like, that was the best summer movie. Like, now, I had a similar experience where I'm like you in a lot of ways when it comes to movies. I went to go see,
I went to this, what do they call it? This chain called Cinepolis. And, they have, like, they took over Bowtie a couple years ago, I guess. And now, like, they had this offer where if you go see Spider-Man opening weekend, you can buy this commemorative Spider-Man glass. So I the nerd in me, I drove like 30 minutes away from me, like 30 miles or so, into Western New Jersey, and I went to the theater and bought a glass at a 7 o'clock screening. And I was like, oh shit, this is gonna be packed. I gotta get there on time. I gotta buy my ticket. I gotta make sure, man, I gotta, you know, I'm ready for this shit. Dude, there were 10 people in the theater.
Good.
I know. I was like, oh my God. Like, I was thinking to myself, it's Spider-Man. It's the summertime. It's Thursday. Like, this shit is gonna be crazy. And it wasn't.
That's good.
Yeah, I was shocked. I don't know.
Did you see American Made?
Yes, I saw that last week, the $5 Tuesday. It was good. I liked it.
Same here. No, I'm ready to run down this fall season.
Yeah.
And get into the movie. Like, the good thing about being home every week is I go to the movies on Fridays. This is my fourth Friday in a row, I think, of going to the movies, sitting down, so I can get back and watching all this stuff. And the beautiful thing about AMC is once December hits, I know they're going to December, January, they're going to re-rack all the Oscar nominees so I can get a chance to go see those.
Now, let me ask you this, since you're an avid movie goer, what the hell? Avid movie moviegoer. How do you? I kind of feel like Hollywood's kind of gone into this having to suffer from the same problem as the NFL in a lot of ways, where some of the films that put out aren't that good anymore. What do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think about the drop in ticket sales at the movie theater? How do you feel about it?
I'm glad you asked about that. I think the quality is killing them. There was an article, that came out, and they were talking about the Will Ferrell movie, that I definitely didn't see.
I want to see it, but I just didn't get around. It's like streaming now, I think.
They were talking about that movie and another comedy movie that came out, and they're like, no one's living up to the hype of Bridesmaids or The Hangover. And then Girls Trip came out and did Bridesmaids numbers because it's a good movie. And I think people are, it's just lazy. They're like, oh, we can just put out this thing that's like that other thing that made a lot of money and we'll get it. And it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So I think the big thing to me is if you get burned by going to see a movie, you're less likely to go to a movie again. Like, think about how many people you know in your just everyday life who are like, I'm lucky if I get to one movie a year.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of my coworkers.
They're like that all the time. And then if that one movie a year they go see isn't good, then they're going to see no movies. And especially with, I think AMC, I like the way that AMC is pushing this. And obviously we see the Studio Movie Drills and the Alamo Draft House and these pushing the same idea of turning the movies into a premium experience.
Yes.
And I like that because you get the reserve seating, you get your food selection if you want it, you get a better chair. Also, I know a chair that's easier for them to clean because they can wipe it down because it's vinyl. So I like that. I like that part of it because I know at least they wiped it down.
Yeah.
I think the average American, you know, pseudo moviegoer, the guy that sees maybe two movies a year, they don't understand the idea. They don't see the benefits of this premium experience, because they don't go to the movies enough to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right, dude. That's key, because I would notice that, like, going to an AMC, like, you know, movie theater prices are super expensive, and like going to an AMC, like a regular showtime on a Saturday or Friday or whatever, it's like, oh, $14.83 or whatever. And I was like, what? Like, I made this audible noise. I was like, what? And she was like, yeah. And so if I pay $14 to go to a dine-in AMC, that's better, where I know the theater's going to be nice, the chairs are cool, and I can have an option of eating if I wanted to. Or I would rather do that. I would rather do that than be in some theater where the seats aren't, the place hasn't been renovated, and it's just like you get some
the riffraff and the peasants. One of the one of my favorite tweets from Patrice O'Neill, like before he passed away, maybe like a few years back, he said, like, he, when the AMC started doing these dine-in theaters, he said, you know, this AMC in Menlo Park keeps all you riffraff out. And like, you know, it'll keep, because it's like, oh, this is too expensive. And then they'll stay out.
Yep.
And
well, I think but the big thing is, if you have, like, there's people in there, oh, what's, you know what? I'm hearing a lot of good buzz about, hey, Marge, hearing good buzz about this hit movie. Maybe Friday we go check it out.
Yeah.
They don't buy their ticket online. So they show up at the box office at a showtime.
Yeah.
Two tickets to It, please, on a Friday night. That'll be $30. $30?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And they don't realize, they don't know the benefits, they don't see any of that positive stuff. So they don't get it. And I actually had a discussion with my brother about this. We got into an argument over dinner. Every year we go on like a back-to-school dinner for my mom, my wife going back into teaching, and my mom being an assistant principal, and me starting the football season. We know we're all going to get really busy now, so we go out for dinner. And
cool.
We're out at dinner, and my little brother is like, hey, man, you up on this movie pass thing? And I was like, no, and I won't be. And he goes, what? I was like, it's not going to work. And it's ripping off the thing that I care about, which is the actual movie theater.
Yeah.
Like, if it was $30 a month, I think they make, it's a good deal. I think it's good. If it's $10 a month, then it just, man, I just don't see how it's going to work, which is why AMC is trying to get out of the deal.
Yeah, that's what one of my coworkers, who's a Stub member, he was showing me that he used it. But it's kind of like, I mean, like, if they do stuff like these things where you can double your points every time you buy something, so every visit that you make, you're earning that $5 reward. I don't know. Like, I mean, because I think that is for people that don't go as much.
I'm an AMC Stubs guy.
Yeah.
And I have Stubs, not for the rewards as much as that, not for the five, like the money back, so much as they finally have a line for people in Stubs. Thank you.
Yeah.
Let me go to the front of the line instead of waiting with these jabronis that act like the movie theater snacks are different.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that they have the snack upgrades. So I get a large popcorn, I can refill it, no problem, great.
Yeah,
but that's the two big selling points for Stubs to me. I'll gladly pay. But here's the thing: Stubs is $15 a year.
Yeah,
and I have no problem paying the $15 a year because I also pay to go to the movies. I use the theater. I see the upgrades. I do all that stuff. I think there's a lot of folks that are like, "Oh, Movie Pass is cheap. This is going to allow me to go see." You know, if you're paying $10 a month for Movie Pass, that means that's one evening movie showing. Maybe not even that.
Right.
And then you're done. But you can see as many as you want over the course of that time. I just think that that's a model that, and obviously the guy that runs MoviePass was a former like co-creator of Netflix. They're going to operate at a deficit consistently, and I just don't know in the physical world where it's not just digital, you're not just selling information. I don't know how it's going to, I don't think it can work. And I think it does really rip off the movie theaters, even though they say that MasterCard is backing every time you go to the movie. I don't know how MoviePass makes the money off of that outside of selling people's credit card information.
Yeah. Cause I thought it was going to be, it used to be what? $30 a month, right?
$30 a month. Yeah.
Cause they trying to,
now it's,
oh, go ahead.
Now it's 10.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I'm just kind of skeptical. One is just, like, I don't need all these automatic debits coming out of my account. that's for one thing. And then two is just, like, which basically everything that you said. Because you can't blame Netflix for movies that come out in the theater that are trash. Like, you can't blame them for that. Because I have Netflix. I've had it for years, since the DVDs, maybe for, like, 10 years. And I'm not, like, that never stopped me from going to the movies.
No.
You know?
I think that it's a convenient, I think just like the NFL and the protest, it's a convenient excuse.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if they released movies for streaming the same day they came out in theaters, I don't think we're seeing a big bump in first week box office numbers.
And I think
I really don't.
I think they were trying to do that. Like, I don't know that I would pay $30. I've run into the problem where if there's an art house movie that I want to see, and like there are maybe two or three times that it happened where it was like, oh, this movie, like Barry Jenkins, the director of Moonlight, his first movie that I love, Medicine for Melancholy. I remember going into the city to see that and then saying like, oh, shit, I'm the only person in the theater. I'm seeing this art house movie, and I get home and that shit is on demand. So I was like, I felt kind of bummed about that, but I still like the fact that I supported that movie in the theater, you know?
Yeah. But I also think that, like, we go to our little indie theater, this little Regal. It's a Regal twin that's completely unrenovated. They only show two movies a week.
Okay.
Like, they have two movies. They have multiple showings, but they only have two. It's a twin. There's only two theaters.
What are they playing now? Like, give me an example of what they...
Let me see what they're playing right now.
Okay.
I haven't been in a little while because they don't think it's Regal. And Regal, the rewards there are terrible.
They're not that you never know where you stand with them. I don't have an app with them, so I don't know. Like, it's usually just been like, I was out of town. I was in upstate New York, and I went to see Brad's plan. Brad's status. Brad's status. Yeah.
They're showing Brad's status right now.
Okay. So like that's kind of like, and then they asked me, "Oh, do you want a free popcorn?" And I was like, "All right, I'll take a popcorn."
Yeah. Yeah, they're showing Brad Status and Victoria and Abdul.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, that definitely sounds about right. Yeah. I think my favorite movie that I've seen this year is Columbus with John Cho and Haley Lou Richardson. Now, granted that, like that's art house. Like that's like
I'm right in the middle. You know what movie I forgot?
What?
And I just realized it. The Big Sick.
Oh, that was really good. Now, what I like.
Yeah, about, I think.
Go ahead.
I think that was my favorite this year.
That was that's up there because I think like you got a movie like you got a juggernaut that was I guess maybe like a dark horse racially. It was a dark horse because it was a small movie. It came out in like January, February, and just became a juggernaut. I really liked Split. As far as like, and then The Big Sick to me, it was, I talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago, how it was a good movie and I'm glad it's doing well, but it's like you had like, even though it's Amazon Studios, you kind of had Judd Apatow, you had Judd Apatow producing it. So
right.
You know, it's not going to flop and it's not, you've got muscle behind it. It just happened to be a really good movie, and it is basically an independent film. You know, it's almost like a 40-year-old. It's like a wolf in sheep's clothing. Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I knew that this was gonna do well.
Yeah.
And
I cried in it.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Yeah. Did I cry? I saw my wife, and we both cried.
I laughed more than I cried in that one, but
I laughed more than I cried, but I cried.
I don't blame you. I don't question you crying. I was surprised that I laughed a lot during that one. And so
it's
much
a dead genre, right?
Yeah, so much so that I have to. I'm sure that I didn't get all the jokes. I know I didn't get all the jokes because. Because in the theater, like they were laughing so much that I missed some of the jokes. You know, like after, you know, I missed a lot. So I'm probably eventually gonna buy this thing when it, you know, it's out now. But it's definitely really good. Kumail Nanjiani's good. He's gonna be hosting SNL next week, so that should be interesting.
Nice.
Yeah. So Felder, brother Felder, where can this was great, man. I'm so happy that you took the time for me, man.
It's fantastic, man. And got to talk about The Mountain Between Us, could talk some sports, The Big Sick, which absolutely I loved it. And hey, man, you know I'm always around.
Oh, what are you listening to? I saw your. I thought of you yesterday. I read like a little article where your girl Tuv Lo had a video where she was making out with a Muppet or something.
I haven't seen that. I'll have to check it out.
I don't know. I don't know what record it is though.
Listening to now, man, Lil Uzi Vert. Okay. That wasn't a joke earlier. I just got the.
No, I know you listen to this young boy rap. I know you listen to
Lil Uzi Vert. I know what I haven't been able to turn off. Lana Del Rey and that Lord.
That's what folks are saying. Folks are saying
from summertime.
Yeah.
From summer, I haven't been able to stop listening to them. I think Lana Del Rey's album is just unbelievable. Like, just she. I used to think like, hey, you know, maybe is Rita Ora better? But Lana Del Rey's way better than Rita Ora. And Lord is, she's a force. Like, okay. It's interesting to me to listen to like see Taylor Swift in this joke. I'm edgy now move because Lord is actually got some edge to her.
Okay.
And it feels authentic and it feels real. Like hearing her cuss is no big deal. Whereas for Taylor Swift, it's just a joke. Like it's just, she doesn't have that same level of authenticity and it really shows. Lord's got, but this, I'm telling you, Lord's got some bangers on that, this latest album, and Lana Del Rey, same thing. The song with The Weeknd is the one I think a lot of folks have heard, but she's got some jams. She got two songs with ASAP Rocky, Summer Bummer and Groupie Love. Groupie Love is a fire track. She does some good work. Those have been in since like June, July, still listening to those, waiting to get into some more stuff.
I got to check that out. I got to check out Lord and,
I'll put it in Dropbox.
Yeah, I gotta check. Yeah, I definitely want to get into that. This Tuv Lo record is called Disco Tits.
Oh wow, I need to check that out. I haven't kept up with her since her last album that came out. I guess it was last year.
Okay, I know. Yeah, because I know you put me on to her, and she's good.
Yeah, I like her. I'll check it out.
Well, Felder, where can people? Were you gonna say something else?
No, I'm good.
Okay, where can people find you, sir?
You can find me on Twitter at In The Bleachers and on Instagram at It's Felder. I will warn you, I do not do work on Instagram. I only cook and there's a couple other family stuff on there, but that's like my actual passion is my fun hobby of cooking is on Instagram at It's Felder, ITSFELDER. Make sure you check me out on Facebook at The Michael Felder. That is where I post all my actual work for work.
Okay.
So that's it. That's it. And then obviously Bleach Report. Follow Bleach Report. Bleach Report or BR_CFB for all the stuff that I'm doing. That's it.
Yeah, and I gotta say, like your Instagram feed is just nothing but food porn. That's pretty much what it is. And then I told in the episode that's currently up, the Andy Haynes episode 241. Uh-huh. I told the listeners about me trolling you and comedian Russ Green about pumpkin flavors, pumpkin like seasonal fall snacks. And
oh yeah, foods.
And you guys,
you got pumpkin soap.
You guys gave me shit about that, but at the same time, you know, you made your pumpkin treats for Rod, for your wife.
Yeah, well,
and then, yeah. And I thought that was great. I thought it was a beautiful thing because Rod tagged me in that tweet, and then said, and I was just like, wow, this is bringing the black community together. It's not just for white women, like black people.
No, well, they originally started out for a white woman,
yes.
But
yeah, yeah,
my wife. But the big thing. But to be fair, I did not use canned pumpkin. We did not use pumpkin spice.
Uh-huh.
We used pumpkin. Like, I went out and bought some pie pumpkins. We hollowed them out. We roasted them. We threw them through the food processor, through the puree, put them through a sieve, get the water out. Then we used that to make the bars, like, real, real authentico.
I bet you'd have a really good cooking show.
Listen, we've pushed some pilots. We've worked on some things, so we'll see how it works out. Maybe I'll get with my agent and tell him that, hey, this is the thing I'm interested in pursuing. But we'll see how it works, man. Like, I genuinely enjoy cooking. I will say this, though. I also am not sure. I'm still very wary about cooking going from a hobby where I relieve all my work stress to becoming a job, because I don't know. I just drink more to relieve my stress if I don't have cooking to do it. But cooking is, that's my passion project. Like, that's where I'm super happy, and it's a safe space for me, is in the kitchen where I can just get after it.
I got to have whenever I'm in Charlotte, I got to have a meal.
Man, whenever you come in town, we'll do dinner. I mean, we love having people over. I love just cooking it up. So,
yeah, that would be great. Well, stay on the line, and I'm going to wrap it up. Thanks so much, Felder, for doing this. This was great. And we'll talk to you next time, everybody.